Welcome to a new edition of the Famous Interviews with Joe Dimino. On this episode, we talk with the CEO of Sparks of Fire, a coach, trainer, and podcaster, Shay Sparks. She has taken the obstacles of abuse, addiction, depression, anger, low self-worth, and more to guide others to transform their trauma into treasure. She is the CEO of Sparks of Fire International, LLC, a certified fearless living coach and trainer, host of the Power of Investing in People podcast, author of How to Get Your Voice Back, and co-founder of Firestarter's Book Project. As a coach and trainer, she guides leaders to step out of their comfort zone so that they can embody the tools and skills to lead with emotional intelligence and intellect through Spark Your Alpha program. Enjoy this story and interview.
Thank you for taking a minute out today. And I want to begin our conversation with what we've lived through for the last 3.5 years, which has been this pandemic. And I'm wondering, how did you get through it and how has it changed you?
Oh, let me get comfortable here.
We're just starting on the ground running.
What did I go through and how did it affect me? Well, first of all, so I was a hairstylist at the time and I was shut down for 2 months being non-essential. And I wish they would have given us 2 months altogether and said, you're going to be off for 2 months rather than 2 week increments, because I would have gotten the car and traveled the country.
Yeah, right.
It was very isolating. When we opened back up, the whole world changed. I mean, you know, people were like debating, is this real? Is it not real? Mask, no mask. And then Memorial Day happened and life changed as we know it in the world, including mine. Actually, my brother passed away from COVID the morning of Memorial Day. And so it was devastating and heartbreaking and out of nowhere. And we didn't know until obviously later that that's what he had, because he was so early, he didn't even get tested on time. And then the long COVID, they know now of all the different issues that it carries and stuff like that. So, so it was brutal for me. Everyone that sat in my chair had a stance on something, you know. And then, like I said, the Memorial Day, and then it was racism, or, you know, racism isn't real. Just like COVID, is COVID real? You know, all the different stance, and then the elections, Democrat, Republican, and then January 6th, did it happen, not happen, you know, all the unfortunate, dramatic conversations that I didn't want to have. To be honest, I was done. Like, really, like, please go back to talking about your family and your puppies and your babies and grandbabies. Yep. And all of that. And so then I guess it was like February, March of 2021. I was grieving my brother, but 2 years before that I'd lost my dad, and 2 years before my dad, I'd lost my mom. Yeah. So I was grieving not just them, but grieving how life was, what it used to be. I'm a social butterfly, and now, you know, people are locked in their homes, and most all my friends were married with children, and I was single, living alone. And so it was very isolating. And I honestly thought I was going to die of loneliness at that point. Yeah. And so I do have one older brother who lives in Florida, and he had been asking me for 28 years to move there. And so in June of 21, I decided to take a month off from the salon, and I drove down and checked it out and said, okay, is this something I want to do? And as soon as I walked in his front door, I was like, I don't want to leave. I've been isolated for so many years at this point, living alone, but just the pandemic sent me over the edge. And so I made the transition of leaving my career after 27 years. And I'm only 30. I don't know how that math works.
Yeah, it's weird.
And and then just really completely redeveloping who I am. But I had been working in the background since about 2016. I had written a book, started a podcast, become a coach, a motivational speaker, had already done all of those things and was working on them as a side gig, as well as having a salon. And so when I decided to make this transition of retiring, quote unquote, from the salon, it was like, okay, it's not now time to focus on all that. So then my whole life changed. I moved to Florida, and now a year and a half later, I have three podcasts, and two of them are on an online network, and that's part of my career. And I have coaching clients on a regular basis, and I go to the beach and watch the sunrise in the morning, and cool. That's my solace and fills me back up. So yeah, good life for you. Completely changed for me.
Yeah. So let's boil down exactly what you do on a daily basis right now. I'm going to put you in front of a bunch of third grade kids. It's career day. And one of the kids looks up and says, "What do you do for a living?" How do you answer them?
I make a positive impact in people's lives.
So you're originally from Kansas City.
Yes.
Talk to me a little bit about the seeds that were put into you that made you want to help people, that grew into who you are today.
So I'll back up. So I've lived most of my adult life in Kansas City, but I was raised on a farm in the middle of Iowa.
Okay.
And I grew up going to church every Sunday. And I think my parents were volunteers and ushers and different things, but we would have fundraisers like pancake breakfast and stuff like that. And the me and a couple of friends would help. It wasn't asked. It was just kind of implied that, you know, at that age, we were probably, gosh, maybe 9, 10, 11 years old. So you would walk with an older person and carry their tray. And so it taught us really to be of service to other people and really have the feel the joy that you get when you are making someone's day.
So what did you want to be in the third grade? What was your dream to grow up and become?
Stunt car driver.
Oh, good. So you were an Evel Knievel kind of person, right?
Oh, for real. Yeah, absolutely.
have you seen that special that they did? They did a movie on him?
No.
Oh,
I'll have to check it out.
It's a trip, because it's like, it goes through the whole thing, his whole life. And then, of course, Snake River, which was just a disaster, which you would have thought that would have been the end of everything, but he recovers from it. So anyway, it's pretty fascinating. So you wanted to do that. You would have been, that's cool.
Yeah. I watched Smokey and the Bandit, I think, one too many times.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, oh yeah, I want a T-top Trans Am and
absolutely
drive real fast and all of that. And Dukes of Hazzard, you know, I love the watching them ride, drive the car real fast. And
oh yeah.
And to be honest, growing up in Iowa, that's kind of what we did. We drove cars really fast on the gravel roads and
it's in the wheelhouse
like that. Yeah. Right. So I was like, oh, that would be fun to do that. I still haven't done it. Although when I moved to Florida, I did pass a raceway for Porsche, actually, that teaches you how to drive a race car. And I was like, oh, I may have to do that one of these days. Yeah.
So you don't have your level of fear is low. You're ready to go in.
So funny you should ask that. So I learned. So I am a certified fearless living coach. So I help people break through fear. And I learned that physical fear and emotional fear are two different things.
Okay.
And so physical fear is that Evel Knievel type thing. The jumping off the couch as a kid kind of fear was never there. However, telling someone I love them was scary. Being vulnerable was like, I couldn't even say the word. Saying I'm sorry first, you know, that was difficult for me. But as I grew, I was in my 20s and half of my 30s, I was in an abusive relationship. And I didn't really get how much fear I was in until I got out of that and was healing on my healing journey and really started to peel away the layers of the onions that I am, that we all are. And looked at, okay, why was I in a relationship like this? And how can I, what is it that I don't know that I need to know in order to move forward? And that has been just the catalyst of everything. So I didn't really realize how fearful of emotions I was and how fearful I was of actually saying what I mean and mean what I say.
There's a level of humans, though, that it's so much easier to say hello than it is to say goodbye.
Oh, for sure.
You know, so
yeah.
That's the backbone of us. So I'm curious, in your life of obviously having to overcome things and teaching people to be fearless and all of these attributes that you have, who's been a hero for you?
What comes to mind first is Jesus. I grew up in the church, but to me, somehow in Sunday school, I'm an only girl, so I had two older brothers, and they would play with each other, and I was left to my own devices. So I would make-believe friends, right? And Jesus was one of them. And I would just kind of, you know, he was perfect, is what we always learned. So not that I strive to be perfect, but I think a part of me did strive to be perfect. So, you know, I had to get the best grades and be competitive and make sure that I was good in anything or good in everything. And then when I wasn't, it was like, well, then I quit. Kind of a you know, childhood type of thing. It's because I had a skewed look at what Jesus was until I got older. I also grew up watching Oprah, and she was definitely someone that inspired me. Mother Teresa, going back to that service piece, she was also someone that I looked up to and learned about growing up. And I think anyone who was really, who was a servant leader, who was able to lead from a place of service and from their heart rather than a place of, you know, barking orders and things like that, which is funny because I work with a lot of the military and vets now where they get barked orders at.
So if you can meet anybody alive right now on this planet, who would it be? Who would you love to spend some time with?
Alive right now in this, at this moment?
Yes.
Only because I don't live in Kansas City anymore. I would love to meet Travis Kelce.
Okay. There you go.
To just really talk to him about, you know, one, his past relationships, but also like how things are now with whoever he's dating. And if this comes out when he's still dating Taylor Swift, that would be awesome. But also like what it feels like to be on, I mean, he was on a TV show and all the different things that he's gone through, you know, really dive into who he is and his personality. And he's such a, like, what he seems to be, such a funny, fun-loving guy. So would really just like to hear his backstory.
You know, I've grown up going to Chiefs training camp. I grew up in Liberty. So I went to William Jewell, and that was when no one went to see him. And I'd play basketball with him, and I'd get the cards from the police officers and have them sign them. And it was really fun. And I've always been a Chiefs fan, even in the darkest hour. And I did go up, and I took my son and my daughter's boyfriend up there. And I saw Travis walk by, and this year there was a different swagger about him. I don't know if he knew he was going to hook up with the international superstar, but there was a different way that he walked this year. So I don't know what that meant. He usually is pretty good about interacting with fans, and he was just kind of in a rush, just kind of doing his thing. And it could have been that day. Who knows? Because I know he got into some skirmishes during training camp this year, but he's always just kind of been that guy that's just kind of gone up the pedestal. So the fact that this is happening right now, to me, is no surprise seeing him over the years.
Well, I'm for it. I absolutely love it, especially since I don't live in Kansas City, to hear about it on, you know, different things. And people in Florida are like, oh my God, you're from Kansas City. Tell me about the Chiefs. And I'm like, really? You want to know? Yes, let me tell you.
But you know how many girls are going, how many dads are taking their girls to an NFL game that the Chiefs are playing now?
I love it.
Maybe they can catch a glimpse of her fist bumping Britney. I mean, it's just,
I know, right? I love it. The woman who colors my hair in Florida is like huge Taylor Swift fan, and she's like, if you find any memorabilia about them, could you bring it back to me? I'm like, absolutely. So I have, of course, I have a little friendship bracelet that says the Kelce era. And then I have, I found her a sparkly pen that says, Travis is my boyfriend.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So let me ask you this. In all of the endeavors that you are on and that you're doing professionally, what gets you up every day? What is the motivation for you to do the work that you do and be who you are?
Great question. So many years, I didn't realize when I got out of the abusive relationship and started on my healing journey, that's when it became very apparent to me that I had just been waiting to die for, you know, my whole entire life. I think I was a daredevil, but I started early on at 11 drinking. And then by 15, I was a teenage alcoholic. And it was like, I'm not going to make it to 16. I'm not going to make it to 18. I'm not going to make it 20, you know, 30, all of the things. And I realized I lived a place from there, like I'm not going to make it. And so when I shifted my mindset, like, wait, I can start thriving instead of just surviving. It became more of a gift. Every day is a gift to be alive, to be just a internally deep gratitude and thankfulness that I'm here and I get to create or co-create, as I like to say, with God, and really be able to utilize all the things that I've been through to help another person to see a different perspective than what they're in, and that they're not just surviving, that there is a way to survive, that they do have a choice. Because for many years, I didn't think I had a choice.
So you're taking that spark and you're helping others. What's been one of your favorite success stories of helping somebody?
Gosh, there's been a lot. And I'm not bragging because it's so surprising to me. Well, one, it was just a few months, actually. I got out of the abusive relationship and she was a friend of mine. We started hanging out and she slowly started to tell me that she was also in an abusive relationship. And I really just shared with her more about what I was going through. Because up until I got out, I wasn't even saying the word abuse. I was like, well, fighting back and things like that. So I was really trying to help her recognize by sharing what I had went through, what she was going through was not right. You know, this isn't how people should treat people. And it took me about a year and a half to really talk to her and share with her things that I wished someone had shared with me. I wish someone had come alongside me and said, you know, I'm in the trenches with you. And I get that you can't just leave because he'll come after you and end you, because that's what most people are afraid of. Mm-hmm. And that's what I was afraid of at the time too. So how can I support you during this? Knowing that your brain is probably thinking, oh, he's going to change as time goes on. It's going to get better. And that's a lie. It's not going to get better. It's only going to get worse. And so to like plant those seeds for her and then say at one point, like, here's the thing, we have to have support outside of me. So can you now share with your parents? And because she had practiced so much sharing with me, she was able to go to her parents and say, hey, I need help. Can you help me with this? And her mom, who I also worked with, I had told her mom, she had asked me about it. And I said, well, I can't tell you, but this is what I will tell you. Please, whatever you do, do not say that she's stupid for being in a relationship like this. And so when she goes to her parents and tells her, her mom says that exact thing. You know, you're stupid for being in a relationship like this. And I was like, ah, I asked you not to say that. And thank God that her dad saw the opportunity to really help and support and do whatever. And so between him and I, we were able to get out of that relationship and really get her into a safer space physically. But the safer mindset now is just the growth mindset that she has now and the healing that she's done over the several years. And it's just been amazing to watch.
So if you have a dream tonight, you run into like a 20-year-old version of you and you could give that version of you a piece of advice based on the wisdom you've gained so far, what advice would you give your younger self?
Go to therapy and tell the truth.
So if all the... Yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, not because I was broken or need to be fixed. It was because I needed to heal. And I think healing is something that we don't talk about enough. Most of us have experienced some sort of childhood trauma. Our childhood experiences shape our adult decisions. And so if we're making poor decisions, like here I was, a teenage alcoholic, you know, why? I wish someone had said to me, like, let's get you into therapy and really telling you the truth and really noticing and being cognizant about how I was not being nurtured as a child in the home, and not loved or, you know, I was cared for and loved by the best way my parents knew how, but they didn't know how. They didn't have the tools and they weren't equipped. So I think that would have been the best thing for me, is to really focus on the healing aspect of it.
So of all the things that you've done, overcome, and become in your life, what are you the proudest of?
Well, since I am back in Kansas City and I had a salon here, I put it out on Facebook like, hey, I'm back in town. Who wants coffees or haircuts? And so the days that I were available, that I was taking clients, I was booked solid. So to just have the relationship that I built with each one of those clients over the 27 years that I did it, 28 years, God, 30 years now. And so all of that relationship, trust, build, the connection is really probably what I'm most proud of. To know that, you know, I haven't seen them in a year and a half and we can pick up and go. And I think I'm pretty much that way with most everyone, is that even if I don't see you for a long time, we pick up right where we left off and dive into what's been going on, what's happening. And yeah, there's never an awkward situation. So for me, I think that's probably what I'd be most proud of.
So if you're 30, you started cutting hair too. You started early on. All right. So everyone has a perception of you, family, friends, clients, colleagues, but you run the show. What's your perception of you? Who do you think you are?
Brave. One word, brave.
Excellent.
Yeah.
What's the best advice you've ever gotten?
I don't know if it was advice, but it was a mantra I had for many, 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 many years, because I'm a workaholic. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we get off the phone, a time machine pulls up and you can go anywhere at any point in history and see something happen with your own eyes, where are you going?
I think I'm going back to be an angel on my mom's shoulder when she was growing up, and to really guide her into her healing. Just some of the, and it wasn't, she didn't share a whole lot about her childhood, but the few things that she shared, it was as if it was normal. And I think I would have loved to been able to go, you know, it's time to heal, going back to that healing component. So yeah, that's what I would have loved to have been.
That's a great answer. So if anyone out there wants to hire you, reach out to you, learn more about you, where do they go? What do they do?
Yeah. So you can go to my website at shasparks.com. That's shasparks.com. You can find my podcast at the Shea Sparks Show on all platforms. Spotify, Apple, Google, all the things. Or you can go to the Shea Sparks Show.com for my podcast website and social media, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube. And I'm always open to DMs or emails or, you know, anything that you want to connect with me.
Excellent. Shea, it was great to catch up with you in the 816. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Best of luck with everything.
Well, thank you, Joe, for having me.
Thanks for tuning in to another Famous Interview with Joe Domino, where we cover the world of art, literature, business, spirituality, music, and more from around the globe. Our esteemed theme music was composed and produced by the great E.E. Pointer of Kansas City's River Cow Orchestra. If you want to hear more interviews, visit the Famous Interviews with Joe Domino channel on YouTube. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening, and until next time.